Calling all small firm architects. It's time to tap into your full potential with Entree Architects Context and Clarity, where inspiration meets innovation. Hey, it's Mark R. LePage, founder of Entree Architect, and I'm inviting you to join my two favorite co-hosts, Jeff Eccles and Katie Kangas, as they bring together authors, experts, and thought leaders for electric conversations with entrepreneur architects around the globe. It's not just a podcast. It's a community where dreams meet action.
There's a simple equation there. And what for me, what that did, just doing that basic calculation, was it allowed me to compare what I had actually saved in my retirement accounts to what I thought a possible projected annual spend might be.
Artists are temperamental, so beautiful design is going to be a priority. When the job is done, we're going to actually need to live in the house, not live with the person who designed it. And so for me, the artistic skill, the architectural skill is most important. And so I would say like that would be 60% of it, if not more.
Gain insights to build a successful practice. Subscribe, engage, and let's redefine your future together. Join the Context and Clarity community, where every conversation adds to your blueprint for success.
We know that running a small firm is tough, and ending the year with a profit may be even tougher. That's why we created Profit for Small Firm Architects. It's a 3-module digital course, and it's available to you for free right now by visiting entrearchitect.com/freecourse. Entree Architect Podcast, episode 131. Welcome back to the Entree Architect Podcast. My name is Mark R. LePage, and this is the podcast dedicated to a successful life as a small firm architect. Whether you have plans to someday start your own firm, whether you're in the process of launching a startup, or you might be an experienced small firm architect just trying to make a difference, this podcast is for you. My goal is to inspire you to build a better business so that you may pursue your purpose with passion and live the life of your dreams. Most of us, when we launched our firms, we started solo, working by ourselves from small private studios and wearing every hat required to run a successful architecture firm. And we worked that way for as long as we possibly could. But we finally reached a point when we knew it was time to get some help. But how? Where do I look? What if I hire the wrong person? How am I going to pay this person week after week after week? That first hire is so critical. It's a pivotal point in every successful architecture firm. This week at Entree Architect Podcast, residential architect Marika McKeel is joining me here on the Entree Architect Podcast, and we talk about how to overcome the fear of hiring that first employee. This episode of the Entree Architect Podcast is sponsored by FreshBooks, the easiest way to send invoices, manage expenses, and track your time. Learn more at freshbooks.com/architect. Marika McKeel, welcome to the Entree Architect Podcast.
Thank you, Mark. I'm happy to be here.
Go back, Marika. Tell me where you learned about architecture and why you ended up in architecture.
So I guess I started with saying I didn't have the perfect origin story. I didn't know I was going to be an architect at age 4. My mom and I sat down before I went to college because you had to pick a major, and decided, okay, well, I'll try this architecture thing. I liked to draw and I liked math, and I figured I'd probably be an engineer. I had always wanted to build, well, I had wanted to build bridges probably in my teenage years. And my whole family is engineers, so that was easy. But I'd try architecture. And so I figured if I applied and got in, then that was great. So I applied and got in. Okay, so there I was an architect.
And where'd you go?
I went to NC State. I was actually recruited there. Mm-hmm. So I also, that was another one. I told the coach, sure, I'll go there if I get into the school, because they had a good architecture program.
Recruited for what?
Recruited for diving.
For diving. So you were a diver.
I was.
Okay.
That was kind of a no-no in the athletic department to be, in, well, I guess maybe it was a no-no in the design school to be an athlete. But with diving, my coach was cool, so we worked it out.
So it was too many commitments. Was that the problem? It's too much of a commitment for both?
Yes. It was mainly the studios. They were, you know, 3 hours in the afternoons, and that was during practice time, so my coach would stay late.
And what did you do after you graduated NC State?
Well, I went to work back in Tampa. I moved back to Tampa and went to work for an architect. And that was, I guess, we started talking about how I got into residential architecture. And that was where I was working for basically commercial. They did a bunch of stuff. But we did a multifamily project. And that was the project where I realized that as, you know, doing this multifamily, I was working with the individual, each individual unit owner and designing their space. And I wanted them to have everything they wanted. But, you know, that's not, well, that's another long story. I was a developer on that one too. But working with the individuals, that's where I realized that I wanted, you know, I really liked that residential part.
And so you liked the residential, so you decided that's where you wanted to pursue.
That's what I was going to say before is the other interesting part is as soon as I got out of school, I decided there's no way I could do residential because I didn't have the patience for it. But then realizing I really enjoyed working with all those people, I was like, huh, that's interesting. So after that was about 5 years. I went back and got my master's in New York at Parsons.
Okay. And so that's the way you found your way to New York? Because that's where you are now.
That's where I am now. And probably about halfway through getting my master's, it was 3 years. So about halfway through, I decided I wanted to live in New York. I love New York and I wanted to stay. So after I graduated, I still, not that I didn't know what I was going to do, I was going to do architecture, but I didn't have a job. So that's when I saw a job posting for Santiago Calatrava. That was another time where I was like, okay, great, well, I'll try that. That would be amazing. And if I get the job, then great. So I applied and got the job and so worked for Calatrava. This was my, you know, build bridges, do big things.
Right. It's like the perfect job for you.
Perfect job. So I was hired to work on the PATH station, and I started working on the Chicago Spire for a while, like when I first started there. And that was really fun because that was residential. And it wasn't, I think each apartment was actually unique, but just because the building spired up, but not necessarily working with the homeowner part, but obviously it's a huge project. So that was cool, but then shifted over and went back to working on the PATH station. Which I really enjoyed. That was great.
And that's in New York City. That's the PATH station down at Ground Zero.
Yes, and it opened this year. And that was really, really cool because, you know, you're working on this. And I remember my direct boss at the time, not Calatrava, but my direct boss, just saying that, you know, he as much work as we put in, as hard as it was, as much, you know, as difficult as it was to work there, it was so rewarding because when, you know, this project opens and it takes, you know, 14 years from start to finish for a project or something like that, it's amazing. You know, walking through that space, not only is it super amazing because it's a Calatrava building, but we worked on, you know, every aspect of it. So it's really cool.
That must have been very rewarding to walk through that space and know that you had some part in it and sort of imagined what it would be like walking through that space years and years ago and then actually walking through it.
Yeah. And some of it wasn't surprising, I guess, of course, because we were envisioning it, we were doing it. But at the same time, it's just amazing. And I went when it was partially open, and I haven't been since it's been fully open. So that's going to be cool.
I haven't been there yet either. I'm only an hour away from it, so I got to get down there and see it. You know, truthfully, here's an admission here. I haven't been to Ground Zero since 9/11. Just haven't. I used to go every year. I used to go and hang out down at Battery Park, and I just never wanted to go back. And I think that might be what pulls me back down there.
Yeah, and it took me a while to go, and I wasn't here for 9/11, but my husband worked right next door. So he's told me lots of stories, and it just, you know, it's heartbreaking. But the memorial is amazing.
Yeah.
The museum is difficult, but amazing as well. But it's beautiful. And then all the buildings down there too. It's really great.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's finished enough that I could go down there and see it again. Definitely different place than it was.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So Calatrava, and so you didn't really do, I mean, the Spire, you did some residential work, but you're a residential architect. So how did you go from Calatrava spires and path stations to residential?
Yep. Great question. So I would say, probably when I was working at Calatrava, it was 2006 to 2010. And, that obviously the downturn was happening. So the place fluctuated. And at the end, well, at my end working there, I think there was one of three people in the U.S. office. They're much bigger now again, but at that point, we were doing anything that we needed to do there. So Santiago and his wife Tina's house was one of the projects. So I worked on that with them, and that was not what I had wanted to do at Calatrava's office, but something really interesting. I really realized that single family residential was something that I truly enjoyed. So with that, it was time to leave the office, but I kind of decided, well, I guess again, I'll try it. I'll go out on my own. I'll do this. I have a great idea. And I'll start my own office and we'll see how that goes. So there we go.
All right. And so you decided, okay, I love this residential thing and I'm going to start my own firm. So that's a big decision, but it sounds like that's the way you make those big decisions. You have this opportunity, you recognize the opportunity, you see that there's an opportunity there, and you jump.
I think that's giving me a lot of credit. That's a good way to look at it. I think it's more like, hey, why not? More naive than, planned out, and we'll just try it and see if it works out. I think it's not like everything I try works out perfectly, yeah. But the things that don't, I just figure out how to make it work differently some other way. So, sure. Actually, I think when I started out, I knew I was going to start my own firm, and I did want to do residential, but I hadn't realized at that point that I was going to focus only on residential. So, also, I mean, part of the reason that I started my own firm was because I decided, because of Santiago's house, that was kind of, I mean, it was their main, I don't know if it was their main home. Their main home is in New York City, in the U.S. So that was their weekend home. And so I also realized that people really want to have weekend homes from the city because the city's insane. And not everybody wants to go to the Hamptons. So people would start going north. So I realized, okay, I think people want houses a couple hours outside of the city. Here's my chance.
Yeah. And so you recognized that before you started the firm, or you started the firm and then saw that recognition?
No, I recognized that when I was working with Santiago in his house, because, they would do that every weekend. And even just going up, even during the week, getting out of the city and looking at the cute little towns, I forget what town it was up there, but there are around a couple of them in every town in Connecticut or upstate New York is adorable and old and beautiful. And there's trees, we don't have those here in the city.
Yeah.
So just leaving, it's like, the pace changes and the intensity is just gone. So, one day out of the city and you're refreshed. Right. It's like, so this is why people leave the city.
And so there's a market for high-end residential second homes north of New York City, and probably elsewhere in other major metropolitan areas. There are areas like this where people who live in the city have a getaway house within an hour or two of the city. And so that was your plan, whether it was a written plan or not. That was you sort of saw that opportunity and said, okay, I could start my own firm and I could focus on that.
Exactly. That would be my start. So that was a reason. That was a reason to jump. And so, okay, why not? So also probably at that time, like I said, it was probably just time for change.
Yeah.
So while I decided I would start my own firm and I was thinking, you know, okay, what can I do? I did a few small projects. I had a few, not necessarily lined up. I had nothing lined up. I just left. And I, of course, I told my mom I was leaving, and she was like, no, why? Why are you doing this now? It's like, well, it's just time. I'm going to just do it. Yeah. So, So I probably started my firm a little too early. I needed some time off. And that was where, you know, every architect has thought, when am I, you know, what am I going to do? Am I really going to continue architecture? I need to change my life. Do I want to become a chef? So that was my 6 months of maybe I should totally, you know, become a chef, do something totally different, and then realized, no, because then that would be my work, and now it's my play. So anyway, decided not to be a chef, went into architecture, made this whole starting your own firm thing happen.
So mainly. So those ideas, those thoughts and chef idea and all that, that happened after you left or while you were considering leaving?
No, that happened after I left. It was more of I needed a break.
Okay. So you jumped, you said, okay, I'm going to start my own firm, and you jumped, and then you jumped out of the water real quick because it was too cold.
Yeah.
And you said, okay, well, let me take, I have an opportunity here to take some time off and think. And so, and what year was that? What year did you
jump? It was 2010. It was January of 2010. And the problem was I knew I had a year because I wasn't going to just, you know, jump ship and not have anything. So I kind of had planned I could live for a year and not have to move and not have to do anything. So, you know, architects, we need a deadline. So, you know, a year, that's a really long time. So I can kind of do whatever I want. Well, it takes a little longer than that to actually start a firm. Right. But, you know, it's like, oh, okay, well, maybe in October I can really get serious about this whole year thing. So
how much time did you actually take off before you actually jumped into the firm and started?
September 15th, 2010, I LLC'd my firm, or PLLC'd it. So that was my, okay, I'm really going to do this. So I guess it was about 10 months.
10 months.
Nine months.
Yep. Okay. Wow. That's a great origin story, Marika. Just so you know.
Isn't the origin supposed to be like before you're 18, not before you're...
No, the origin story is how did you get to where you are today? That's the question. We want to know your journey from where you started, wherever you discovered architecture, and the story to where you find yourself today. And we are now finding yourself where you are today. So tell us about Marika McKeel Architect and what you do and, you know, where you are today. What do you do today?
Well, we are solely residential architecture. I'd love to be solely outside of the city, but we do have some projects in the city. But the goal is, the goal is building homes. But the focus is really in the Hudson Valley, which I call upstate, but about 2 hours north of the city. And we are now four people, and I have been one until last September. So that's what we do, build houses, build homes.
We build
homes, not houses.
Right. So you're based in New York City, and the majority of your work and your plan is to have all of your work outside of the city. Right. That's what you just said. And you also, you have a very interesting way of doing the work up in the Hudson Valley. You're not, most of your projects are not client-based services, right?
Most of all of my built projects, well, totally finished, are mine. But client-based services is now the majority of our work.
Okay. So the majority is client-based services, but you're doing developer, architect
yes.
as developer, essentially.
Yes.
The houses that are built in upstate right now are houses that you designed and built and mm-hmm. are in the process of selling or have sold.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. So that's a great story in and of itself. But I want to talk about, you said since last September, which is less than a year, you went from solo to four employees.
Well, three employees.
Three
four
employees.
Total.
It's four total. So you have three employees.
Yes.
That's a huge jump.
It is.
And that's what I want to talk about, because this month at Entree Architect, we're talking about management. And I'll have you come back if you're willing to and talk about the developer stuff. And I know everybody's starting to probably get angry at me, because every time I have somebody on who does some architect as developer work, I say, well, I'm going to have you come back. And I do. I have other people lined up for that, and I'd love to have Marika come back and talk about that as well. But I want to know how she went from zero employees to three employees in less than a year. So Let's talk about that. Talk about that first one. And because that first employee is something that we all struggle with. I struggled with it. Anybody who starts their firm without a staff and needs to find that first person, that is a huge obstacle to get past. It's scary. It's fearful. It's a risk. So how did you get from, first of all, how did you know that it was time? Because how long were you in business before that first one came? Let's start there.
Almost 4 years or maybe 4 years.
So you were totally solo for 4 years. And what made you say, okay, I have to get an employee?
Well, I realized that I was trying to be the client happy business, just like you say, you know, keep my clients happy and they're my priority. And when I am failing that, because if I had worked 24 hours a day, I would not have been able to keep up with the deadlines that they needed for their projects to, you know, just a normal schedule, not even fast paced. That was when I realized that I was doing my clients a disservice by not hiring someone. So I needed help. So that's how I knew I needed someone. And then of course, just like you said, that it was the scariest thing. And this was, I don't know how many meetings with you, you know, discussing how to do this. Is this really going to work? I mean, you know, having your own firm is one thing, but hiring someone means, wow, this is really a firm. This is really serious. You're really doing this. This is the point where, you know, it's like, sure, I can do it. I can jump in and make it work or whatever. But now if you hire someone, it means, I really got to make this work. Yeah, this is really for real.
No turning back.
Right. Like, yep. This is for real. Am I really ready for this? But, you know, luckily, I guess things were busy for one person. So therefore, it was like, okay, just got to do it. I started with a contract employee. I started with someone that was not full time. So he was 60% time. And that was very helpful.
But was that a part-time employee or was that an independent contractor?
Independent contractor.
Okay.
And that was kind of my, I'll test the waters. I won't really commit. I will. And I knew him. So all of the stresses of not, you know, I took a little bit of that away with him. But what I realized quickly was he also was trying to start his own thing. He was doing other things. He was not 100% invested and or committed. And he was very upfront about that. So right. no fault of his. But yeah. I realized quickly that, you know, I was looking for someone that was completely invested and someone that was going to be, you know, not necessarily a partner with me, but care. And I guess I would say follow through. But, you know, just really be invested in our firm or in us.
Right.
So realized, okay, it's time to actually legitimately hire a full-time employee because that was what was important to me, was the buy-in and someone, you know, someone to be completely committed and fully invested in.
You wanted somebody us. Part of the team, not just somebody who was part-time working for you and kind of, you know, doing the work that you need them to do. You wanted more than that. You wanted that total commitment and buy-in and you wanted to build a team.
Exactly. And I think that's probably, you know, now that you say it, that's probably the what has always been most important to me, like that team thing. I've always been part of a team. So in that way, that's kind of what I know. That's the way I approach things. And as independent as I think I am, it's the team is the way we get better. And it's not just, you know, our team and the fact that I picked someone perfect, but I think it's just the idea of a team. That's how I know how to work anyway.
Yeah. I mean, could you imagine a sports team with all independent contractors?
Exactly.
They work for other teams as well, but sometimes they come and they hang out with you and they do their best they can while they're with you, but then it just wouldn't work.
Yeah, exactly. And I was pausing because I was a diver and therefore I was less teamy than us. But anyway, that's a side note. That doesn't matter. We're still a team.
Yeah. And so that's something you want. And I don't think everybody needs that, but that's something you wanted. Do you see that first independent contractor as a mistake, or do you think it was a stepping stone to get to where you needed to be?
It was a stepping stone. If I had to give advice to someone, I don't think that you need that stepping stone. I would say I don't know if I needed it either, but I kind of had to go through that. It was something that I needed to do. But if I had known now what I, if I knew then what I know now, I wouldn't have needed to do that. Basically, I needed someone so quickly that I probably would have made a bad decision in hiring. You know, I think hiring the first person took a lot of time, and that was very important. So, you know, at that point, I kind of just needed someone to work and wasn't ready. I wasn't ready to fully hire someone. So it was a stepping stone, and it was a, I wouldn't say it's a learn, it was a learning curve. It was a good transition.
Yeah. Yeah. So it led you to where you are today. It was helpful for you at the time, not necessarily the way you would recommend somebody who's listening, do it. And maybe they do it. Maybe they don't do it. It's just not a necessary step. Let's take a quick break here to say thank you to FreshBooks for their support as a platform sponsor of Entree Architect. Because as a platform sponsor, FreshBooks has provided funding and support for our overall mission here at Entree Architect. They recognize the need for small firms like us to build better businesses in order to be better architects. FreshBooks is the easy-to-use accounting software designed to help us small firm owners get organized, save time, and get paid faster. It takes care of invoicing, expense tracking, estimating, reporting, and it all happens out on the cloud, so you have access to your information from anywhere that you have access to the internet. And I use FreshBooks for my own small firm, Five Cat Studio, and my favorite feature of the FreshBooks software is sending my invoices by email and allowing my clients to pay by credit card. When FreshBooks says that you'll get paid faster, they're not kidding. With the convenience of clicking a button and paying by credit card, many of my clients pay now as soon as they receive their invoice. And for those clients who don't pay right away, FreshBooks automatically sends them a reminder of the balance due at an interval that I set. So once I send an invoice, I can go back to being an architect, and I don't need to chase down any of my clients. And Tim Lee of FreshBooks will show you how easy it is to send invoices by email on our exclusive video series Tim and I produced exclusively for the Entree Architect community. Check out this free video series at entrearchitect.com/FreshBooksVideo. There's no catch. There's no email. It's completely free. Just go to entrearchitect.com/FreshBooksVideo and you will get the videos right away. There's three of them. Shows you everything you need to know about getting started. And then go to FreshBooks.com/Architect and sign up for your free 30-day trial and give it a try. It's free. I suggest you just send one invoice and see what happens. That's how I got started. Just send one invoice to one client and see how it works. And when I did that and I got paid much faster than usual, I signed up for the rest of it and I set up my whole account in FreshBooks. FreshBooks.com/architect for your free 30-day trial. And be sure to enter Entree Architect into How Did You Hear About Us section. So the first person you did hire full time, what role and responsibility does that have? That person, is that a high level person or a low level person? Or
you're supposed to hire a high level person first, so that you don't have to teach as much. The contract worker was somewhat high level, not necessarily residential, but somewhat high level. So I guess I kind of had that, knowing at the same time that was not going to be long term. Hired someone straight out of undergrad, and that was what I needed to do at the time. Now, and maybe it's just that she's actually perfect, but what she is doing is her energy and her excitement about what she's doing, like that right there, I think might actually be more important than high level.
So it was an entry level role?
Yeah, entry level role.
So and intern level.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, straight out of 4 year. So
yeah. And what was most important to you was that she was that team member, that somebody who wanted to come in all in, wanted to dedicate her time and her energy to Marika McKeel Architect and make it into something special and amazing.
Absolutely. And she is all of those things. And I think I'm just really lucky. But it did take, I mean, I had a lot of interviews, and it took, I don't know if it was 6 months.
Talk about that process a little bit, some detail on that. What was the process you went through to hire that first person?
Well, I put out a job ad on ArchConnect because, I mean, in New York City, I think we have an advantage with ArchConnect. There's a lot of people on it. What I realized was I put that out in May, and therefore every single person that was graduating looking for a job, put their resume out. And I realized quickly that, the ones that actually, I had someone put multiple email addresses in the to field, multiple architects,
right.
They're just sending stuff. So that was not what I was looking for.
Yep. You filter those out very quickly.
Yes.
What else did you filter out? That's a very good tip for the students looking for work.
Yeah. Really easy. Dear sir.
Yep.
That one, yeah, out of there.
Delete, right?
There's one of us here, and there's one person on a website, and there's nothing sir about me. So
I could tell you the one thing that you need to do, who's listening here, who is looking for a job, is find out who you need to direct the email to and direct that email to that person. Don't ever write dear sir or don't write anything and just post it to find out who you need to talk to and send the email directly to them.
Definitely. I mean, and dear Marika or dear Ms. McKeel, depending on how formal you want it to be. Great. And I mean, the other thing was clearly there's a form letter or there's the three people that I interviewed that I was very interested in and it was worth a conversation, wrote a cover letter that they knew my work. They were very interested in working for me and they cared about residential architecture. So, with that part, everybody just wants a job, but I wanted residential is really important. And, not that you have to know about me, but you got to know about what we do or anything about.
So they did some research. So they knew who you were. They knew what type of work you did. They knew what was important to you. Because,
mm-hmm.
For you, and there's a few architects out there, but for you, you're putting it all out there on your newsletter and on your website. It's not hard to find out what's important to you as an architect. And it's not hard to find out your name and put your
right.
name
yeah.
on the
yeah.
email that they're sending. And so the people that you ultimately spoke to in their interviews were the ones who did the work, who did the research to find out who you were, addressed a custom letter to you, talking about the things that they knew that you were looking for and said, I'm the person you're looking for.
And I would say then in the interview, just like you said, I've written a blog for years. So if in the interview I would casually mention blog and I'd glaze over it as if I didn't want to, dwell on it. But if they had this look like, what? You
right.
write a blog? It's like, okay, well, you didn't do your research either. So that was another thing on, that part's easy. See if you have a blog. Yes. I mean, it should be that you are looking for a firm that you really want to work for. And don't just work anywhere. That's not what you want to do. Find someone that you really want to work for. That makes all the difference. That's where, Marissa is the first one I hired. And it was very clear. She knew she wanted to work here. And that's part of that's number one reason I hired her. And it was like, as soon as I had that interview, and she can probably hear me, but as soon as I had that interview, it was like, okay, I need to jump on this because the good ones go fast.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. And that's good advice for the architects who are listening right now, is that when you find the right person, get them.
Yes.
But you said you went through a very long process to find that. So you advertised on ArchConnect, and then you got a whole bunch of emails and filtered out the ones you didn't want. And you ultimately shortlisted three. Is that what you said?
No.
Shortlisted more than that. Three were like the final.
Yeah, well, I think it was more like over time three because, I may have had a few other interviews and a lot of them were on Skype, but and some coffees, and I would meet someone. You get a good sense and it's difficult. It's difficult to meet someone and they're opening up to you and you're thinking there's no way that I can hire this person or not even hire. There's no way I can work with this person. So, that's important. And
how does that happen? Is that a gut feeling just from a conversation? Sort of the vibe that you get?
Yes.
Yep.
Yes, very much so. Whether some people are just looking for a job and they come off, like they're really interested, but then you realize they hate their job. I mean, one question for anyone who's changing jobs, and this isn't the second one, but why are you leaving your firm? And some people just dump, and they have all of this negativity, and it's like, okay, well, I'm really sorry to hear that, and that's just that's not going to work here. So it depends on how and how the conversation flows and how the person is and what they are really interested in. And obviously, what's important. If someone, positive attitude is something that's very important. And you can tell that from 30-minute conversation. That's, very quickly you're going to know whether that person is mainly positive or if, it does kind of come out quick, especially when you ask the right questions.
Yeah.
Why are you leaving your firm? That's always one to really go negative on. Because everybody who has, I've got plenty of negative things to say, but that's not what I want to talk about.
Right. Right. So once you do find like the top three, how do you decide on the right person?
It was the conversation. I would say I could have probably narrowed it down to the cover letter, but she is a very good writer.
Yeah, but that too is very, very important. Is that when I get inquiries for people looking for jobs, your writing matters. It really matters a lot that if you can write a letter, like a letter is supposed to be written, and you have good grammar and your letter flows, and that says a lot about the rest of the person.
Exactly.
And so that's really important that the letter that you put together is not only addressed to the right person and it's talking about what you want it to talk about, but it's well composed and it's well written. Because I'm not sure that there's a lot of too many people are being taught that anymore, to put together well written letters. And so that will make you rise to the top.
Mm-hmm. I mean, and we have to do that as architects.
Right.
I don't know if you have to write the letter, but you will eventually, and you have to present yourself well. So, obviously if your letter isn't the greatest thing in the world, but then you present yourself really well, that certainly can stand above the letter,
but the letter matters.
Definitely matters.
Letter matters a lot. It gets you the interview.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
And truthfully, the cold call and the broadcast email is a waste of time. There is no architect that is saying, "Oh, another broadcast email that's not directed to me. Let me read this." It gets deleted. So don't even waste your time. Spend that time doing research on the firms that you want to work with. And address the person you want to work for.
Exactly. And if it works, if you do get the job from that blast email, that is not a firm you want to work for.
Right. So you hire the first person, and she's awesome.
Yeah, she's awesome.
And so now you have an employee, and you're rolling, and everything's great. And so, when does number two show up?
Well, and this is a complicated / funny story. So number two showed up October 1st. First one was September 1st, second one was October 1st. But
so you like this idea of an employee. Yeah. You said, we got to do this again.
Yeah, this is a unique situation. So I'll just talk about the second one quickly, and then the second architect is probably more of what you're getting at. But my second employee was the admin, or basically the office manager for Calatrava. So she called me, and she had always helped me out, and we were friends and worked together for 3 years. So we always kind of knew, or I always hoped that she would eventually come work for me, but we knew, there's no way I can afford this. Well, she called me in the middle of September and said, basically, I have to go. I have to leave. I have to make a move. Can we do this? And it was like, oh, man, that's big.
This is not the timing that I expected.
Yep, but absolutely, let's do it.
And this is a higher level person now.
This is a higher level person. This is, yes.
This is somebody who's going to help you run your business.
Exactly. And that was the second smartest. They were equally as smart, those two moves. She's amazing. She is a partner without having a partner. And she is absolutely right there. We make decisions, and actually as the office we all do, but Tracy was the second hire, and so yes, she runs the office, she takes care of me, she takes care of us, she at the same time likes a challenge. So for me, this was okay, all this social media and all of this, you know, PR, like she used to do PR before she was the office manager at College Travis. So it's like she gets to get back into the creative mind, and she's always worked for architects. So it's, she's just absolutely the best thing you could hope for. And there she is. It's like, okay, so let me unload as much as I possibly can that she, you know, would hopefully like to do. And she loves it, or she says she does, but she does an amazing job. So we are, you know, it's like she's advertising, she's marketing, she's business development, she's also taking care of the office. So she's everything.
So you took off a bunch of hats.
Yes.
And you handed them to Tracy and said, here you go.
Yes.
And let me get back to being an architect.
Yes. And that was the whole goal. And it really has worked. And of course it wasn't, you know, yes, I knew her, but it's still my firm and my business and my baby.
Yeah.
So the handover was very much like, okay, well, we'll do this together for a little while and we'll do this together. So, you know, no, I didn't just hand everything over.
You're still leading those decisions. You just have somebody taking on those roles and responsibilities that someone else could do better than you.
Yes.
And so you could focus on the things that you're good at. What's very interesting is that the way you described it, it sounded like she just landed in your lap. But in fact, she is an excellent person to hire at that point, because now you're busy and you have staff that's helping you get the architecture done. To have somebody come in at that level who can take away the business part of what you're doing will take you exponentially to the next level. So because you can now focus on architecture and make your architecture better, and she can focus on the business and make the business better. It's a perfect opportunity. And, you know, it also, I hear people saying in the back of my head, oh, she's Calatrava's business manager. How lucky. You know, that wasn't luck. That was you taking that opportunity years ago to take that job, to meet those people, to make those connections, met her, became friends with her, left there, still kept those contacts strong. When that opportunity came, you were positioned for that opportunity. That didn't just happen. That was something that you may have not planned, but you took those opportunities along the way, and those dots connected. And you find yourself where you are today with that person.
It sounds so much better when you say it, Mark.
But that's what happened.
Yes. I would say also for someone that didn't, all those scenarios didn't happen, I wouldn't have ever thought to look for someone as advanced as Tracy.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't have thought to be able to support that or you know, or make that, not even leap, but stretch, or, you know, just really dive off of that cliff, let's say.
Yeah.
But very, very, very worth it. And just like you say, you know, we work so hard and we're working on one project. And the idea is that you should be marketing and business developing to get at the next project, so that it's like, you know, otherwise you just have all these hats and you can't do the architecture. So yes, that was a really good move. It was a tough one as far as if it hadn't fallen in my lap, I don't know that I would have done it. And I absolutely should have.
Yeah. And most architects don't. You know, most architects see when they get busy, they say, okay, I need another architect. You know, I need to get somebody to do some of this other work that we're doing so we can keep growing. But in fact, as you grow, all of these other responsibilities and these roles grow too. But now you don't have somebody to help you with that. You have to do that. And you get pulled away from the architecture to go do that. And so it's a great opportunity to find somebody at that level, you know, relatively early. It may not be the first person that you hire or the first advanced person you hire. Maybe it is an architect, but that's a very important person to hire very early on.
Yes, agreed. And even if that was part-time, I mean, I wouldn't change it in my world. Again, team and the way the three of us, before the four of us happened, but the way the three of us really are creating Studio MM, I mean, we can get into that, but exponentially between December and January, or January and February, we grew because of those two people. So in that way, yes, full time, absolutely. But it is so smart. Those things that you hate doing, those things that you are not good at doing, those things that take away all of your energy and time for the things that you do love doing, get someone in there to do that. I think that's really important.
Yeah. Yeah. That's great. So the third person, I didn't know there was a third person. I lost track.
I haven't had time to talk to you.
You've become this employer machine. So tell me about the third person, what their role and responsibility is, and why you chose to hire the third employee in less than a year.
That was mainly because the contract worker that I talked about, who was, you know, 60% time, he needed to go do his own thing, and we needed to, you know, be more full-time focused, more team focused. So he left, and that left a bit of a gap. And so we were looking for someone that had, you know, we have passion, we have design, we don't have detail strength and CD strength, kind of a thing. So that's what we were looking for. Excuse me. And that's coming into 2016. I think we had tried to, I think we maybe put out a job ad in 2015, but didn't find anyone. You know, we knew it was going to be a unique person because of who we were, how strong we were as a team. That person had to really like coming into that. Plus, we're small. So, you know, someone advanced but willing to come into a small firm and willing to really, you know what we're about and care about that. This was, you know, going to be even harder than the first one.
Right.
So that, it took a long time. And we're also now three people making a decision rather than just one. Right. So all three of us had to, you know, like him, interview him, be on the same page, make sure we were doing
the
right.
So that's interesting. So did you have them interview him as well?
We did. Yep. So he knew what he was getting into.
Yeah. Yeah.
Three women, and actually it was in one day.
Yeah. Very interesting. And he stuck around.
He did. He did. And we had sort of warned him, and so he kind of knew what he was coming in for. So.
Yeah. And so his responsibility is what? He's an architect?
He's studying, and okay. So he will be an architect.
So an experienced person, just not yet licensed.
That's right.
Okay. So there you go. So Studio MM, that's the full description, right? There's nobody else?
No, that's it.
Yeah. Anybody hiding under the desk?
Absolutely not.
Okay.
No.
So that's good. So so where are you planning to go in the future? Are you planning, do you have plans to grow? And if not, what's your next step?
Shakes head furiously. No. We're going to work really well as a team, and we're going to establish ourselves. And I think we are. I think we're, you know, it's every, you add a new person and it takes a little bit of time, but I think we're figuring out, I don't know how you best say that, but let's say we're on this four tandem bike and we're full speed ahead now.
Yeah. So what's important right now is now you have your team, you have everybody that you need for this level of where you are. And so now you're going to develop the business and get these four people who are working together in sync with one another, get your roles and responsibilities all organized and figured out, develop the systems that you need to develop in order for all those people to know what they need to do and when they need to do it. Get that all working at, like a machine.
Exactly. Yes, exactly.
Then look to growth if that's where you want to go.
Yeah, and I'm not sure. I mean, yeah. You know, I'm not against it, but number one, we've maxed out the office, so that's a even bigger step than just another person.
Right. So that's probably the next big step is probably finding new facilities.
Yeah. Well, yes.
Which is a long way off.
Yeah,
and that's a reason why you sort of hit your ceiling right now with the number of people that you have because you've maxed out your facility. So the next step would be to have something bigger than that. But sort of go full circle here. You are a person with an open mind. I'm sure that will probably happen much sooner than you expect it will. You shake your head no, but but you also shook your head no on that first employee and that and all those other decisions that you made, this podcast included.
Yep.
And look how well this has gone.
Yep.
Tremendous value to everybody who's listening. I appreciate you coming here and speaking about how you've grown to where you are today, Marika. I appreciate you sharing your knowledge with the Entree Architect podcast.
Well, thanks, Mark. And I appreciate you pushing me to do all of these things. So thank you.
It's my pleasure. It's been a pleasure watching you grow and to see the decisions you make and the results that come from it. So thanks for being a part of the Entree Architect world and for sharing your knowledge. So thank you.
Well, yeah, and you've been there every step of the way and the academy. So that's been a huge help. And it's kind of like, you know, there's a bunch of other people that are doing it too and say, yeah, you can do it.
Yeah.
So all of that's really helpful.
Yeah. Good. Good. Okay. Well, let's wrap it up. Thank you for being here.
Thank you very much. Have a good day.
You too. Complete show notes and a direct link to download this episode will be found at entrearchitect.com/episode131. And don't forget to download your free course at entrearchitect.com/free course, Profit for Small Firm Architects, and get profitable right now, entrearchitect.com/free course. My name is Mark R. LePage, and I am an entrepreneur architect. And I encourage you to build a better business so you can be a better architect. Love, learn, and share what you know. Thanks for listening, and have a great week.
From historic homes to modern architecture, brick is one of the most popular building materials around the world.
How to allow the house to bridge the gap between the history of the site, the approachability of this kind of architecture in this kind of neighborhood, and the sort of nostalgia of materiality for the client's past, right? And brick really started to provide an answer for that.
Hi, I'm Doug Pat, and this is Design Vault. There aren't many materials that easily blend with any style and context, but brick does just that. I've seen some extraordinary work with brick, so when Glengarry approached me about hosting this podcast, I couldn't say no.
Typically, Tudor-style houses from outside are just stunningly gorgeous piece of structure, and when you go in, it's just sad.
Yeah.
Dark. And that is not going to happen with my approach to design.
I speak with industry leaders and share inspiring stories behind their work and ingenious design.
You'll see brick that's fashioned into basket weave patterns, sawtooth patterns, what's known in England as diapering.
Doesn't sound like you knew them per se, right? They found you through relationships that you had with other.
Well, wait, Doug, there's more.
Okay.
We'll go behind the scenes to understand process and even the inspiration that sparked the design.
You know, I think we were inspired by all the factory buildings in Dumbo. I mean, that is the kind of period of significance, that early American factory building.
Design Vault by Glengarry. Visit glengarry.com/design-vault or search for Design Vault wherever you get your podcasts and subscribe now to stretch your imagination.
Attention architects and creative minds, get ready to supercharge your brand with Build Your Brand, the podcast that's unlocking the secrets of branding success for creatives. Hey there, it's Mark R. LePage, founder of Entree Architect, and I'm inviting you to join my friend, architect marketing expert, Jeff Eccles at Build Your Brand podcast, where he explores the captivating stories of the world's top brands and transforms their lessons into powerful moves for small firm architects and creatives like you. In season one, Jeff shares the thrilling tale of Southwest Airlines, where he dissects their journey to the summit and distills it into strategies tailor-made for you.
It's important to keep in mind that companies like Southwest compete in the real world, just like you, and face real-world challenges, just like you. You might be surprised at how similar those challenges are to the struggles that you grapple with on a day-to-day basis.
Don't miss out on your blueprint for success. Subscribe, tune in, and let's build your brand together.
You may have noticed that the very best brands in the world are also known for having somewhat unique corporate cultures. That's often the glue that holds everything together when they encounter those rough spots.
We don't do it because it inconveniences the passengers to whom we are primarily dedicated, the short haul, frequent flyer.
Follow the link in the show notes to subscribe to Build Your Brand today. Remember, no matter the size, the journey's the same. Your brand's journey to the top starts here.